a quick review of where we were a couple of weeks ago. Again, thank you, big thank you to Steve for filling in. But we've been looking at the events after, immediately and further after Jesus' resurrection. We started looking at this a couple weeks ago. Jesus made a series of appearances to his disciples, to the apostles and the other disciples. We were kind of working our way through that. As we were doing so, we noticed that Mark tells us that the very first person Jesus showed himself to, his resurrected form, was to who? Mary Magdalene, right? She was the very first person to see him. And then after that, he appeared to the group of women, the other group of women that had went with her that morning to the tomb to care for the body. You may remember Mary, as soon as they go in and see that the tomb's empty, she runs away and she goes and gets Peter and John. The other women stay there, but in the time that it takes Mary and Mary and Peter and John to get back to the tomb, those women have left. Well, Jesus appears first to Mary near the tomb, and then somewhere on their trip back to where they were staying, I'm assuming they're going back to where they're staying, he appears to the women, the other women. That would have included, you know, that group that's been very tight-knit ever since his death, burial, death and burial. After that, he then, and this is where we left off, so if you want to go ahead and we're going to look at his next appearance, and we're going to have to kind of dig into the text to discover exactly who we're talking about. So if you go to Mark 16, and then we're going to go to Luke 24. So go to go to Mark 16, but hold Luke 24. We're going to spend most of our time there. So Mark 16 and verse 12, this is right after he appeared to the other women. Mark 16 and verse 12, it says, after these things, he appeared in another form. Now, this is very similar, right? He's appeared to Mary Magdalene, seemingly in another form. She didn't recognize him at first. She recognized his voice, not his appearance. Possibly same kind of interaction with the other women as well. And now the text says that he appeared in another form, or another form other than his one they had been used to. He appeared in another form to two of them. All right, so notice that, to two of them. Mark does not identify who they are, at least not yet. Just simply says to two of them. As they were, and it also goes on to say, as they were what? Walking into the country. So these are two disciples that are walking into the country, and Jesus is going to appear to them. And then it says, verse 13, they went back after this meeting and told the rest, but they did not believe them. Okay, so let's go to Luke 24. And the text will identify who those two were. It's a little bit lengthy of a reading, but I want to go through it. So we're going to start at verse 13. So Luke 24, 13. The text tells us that very day, two of them, notice that similar language, two of who? The disciples. Two of the disciples were going to a village. Remember in Mark, he said they were going into the country. The same kind of idea. They're leaving the more metropolitan area of Jerusalem and they're headed to a smaller area, to a village, here in Luke 24. Its name was Emmaus. It's about 7 miles from Jerusalem. So you think about it kind of like Bethany. Remember, we talked about Bethany was a suburb, essentially, in our way of thinking, of Jerusalem. Well, Emmaus was another suburb, if you will, of Jerusalem. So it's not very far away. So we don't know why they're going to Emmaus, but that's where they're going. And they were talking with each other about all the things that had happened. While they were, okay, so just real quickly, I'm sorry, I'm breaking this down as we go along because I want our mind to think this through. What are they talking about? Let's think about up to this point, what do they know? What are some of the things you think they may have been talking about?
Jesus was arrested.
Okay, so maybe part of, and I'm sure part of their discussion is all the events of Friday night. Now, remember, we're not far removed. This is just a few days later. So I'm sure they're talking about the arrest, the crucifixion, all that he went through with that. Anything else you can think of they might be talking about?
Well, did they know that the women had seen Jesus or not?
Yes. How do we know that? Well, the text has told us this. This is after. What did the women do immediately after seeing Jesus? What did they do?
They ran and told people.
They ran and told the disciples. So you already have Mary and the other women saying, you won't believe this, but Jesus has risen from the dead. We've seen him. But what does the text say to us when those women told the other disciples? What did they do? How did they respond?
Unbelief.
I mean, somebody told you somebody rose from the dead. That's kind of a crazy story, isn't it? I mean, that would be kind of hard to take. So, yes, sir.
I was just going to say, we would say that. But you would think that they would be a little more sympathetic to what's going on, considering that they know that he could do miracles and all sorts of things. And he wasn't just a normal person.
Yeah.
But and I also see what you're saying is, you know, the first thing you think of is, come on, really? But I don't know. That's just a thought that I had, that it seems like we would be that cynical, but I'm not sure why they are.
So, one of the, and I was just reading this today, and I think it's Mark, or maybe it's Matthew's gospel in 28, tells us, so part of it probably is, I mean, this is an unbelievable act. Part of it is, too, one of the gospels says, but for hope, they did not believe. Well, what does that mean? For hope, they did not believe. You ever have something that seems so unbelievable, so exciting, you at first just can't believe it's true? I remember I was listening to something happened to somebody where the husband had went out to a local grocery store, and his wife, she was very like, you only spend this money. They were very poor, and so they had to spend precisely. Well, the husband didn't always spend wisely, and so they went out to the store, and out to his kind of like a gas station, if you will, and he was buying some stuff they needed for home. Well, he decided to buy a lotto ticket. Now, he knew that his wife would not be happy about it. But he got this lotto ticket, and unbelievably, he won millions of dollars. This ticket came by, and he went home to tell his wife. Well, can you imagine her reaction to that? I mean, at first, and I'm not endorsing playing the lottery. I'm just telling you what happened with them. But you're an impoverished family, and then here all of a sudden, all this money. Would you at first kind of be like, you're lying. You're making this up. You're playing some joke on me. You didn't win the lottery.
You're just trying to give me an excuse, you know, for buying the lottery ticket.
And in some ways, this is kind of like winning the lottery. What are the odds of the lottery happening? I mean, it's astronomical. What are the odds of somebody resurrecting from the dead?
More astronomical.
And so I think the writer is trying to depict for us, what the Holy Spirit is trying to say is that it's just too hopeful to believe he actually resurrected. That's almost too hopeful. And so there could be all kinds of reasons we could give for their disbelief, but you know they struggled with it. And we'll get more into that as we get into talking about Thomas. So let's go back to Luke 24. So they're walking along, they're talking about all this craziness that's been going on. And now remember, these two have not seen Jesus resurrected. And this will become apparent as we move forward. But these two have not seen him resurrected. So they're still going on the word of what the women have told them, what the those disciples have told them. So, verse 15. While they were talking and discussing together, Jesus himself drew near and went with them. But their eyes were kept from recognizing him. Now, I don't know whether that means... Now, Mark tells us it was another form. I don't know if that was because the Holy Spirit had done something to their eyes where they weren't seeing Jesus as he was, or if this is just trying to indicate that their eyes couldn't see his real form because he was in a different form. Whatever it is, that's not really that super important. But they don't recognize him. All right, so verse 17. But he said to them, "What is this conversation that you are holding with each other as you walk?" And as they stood still, looking sad, have they bought into the fact he's resurrected yet? You wouldn't be sad if you had, would you? Looking sad, then one of them named Cleopas answered him, "Are you the only visitor to Jerusalem who does not know the things that have happened there in these days?" He said to them, "What things?" And they said to him, "Concerning Jesus of Nazareth, a man who was a prophet, mighty in deed and word before God and all the people, and how our chief priests and rulers delivered him up to be condemned to death and crucified. But we had hoped," notice that, "we had hoped that he was the one to redeem Israel." Yes, and besides all of this, it is now the third day since these events happened. So what day are you on? What day is this?
Sunday,
right? It's all started Friday. You're in Sunday now. So it's the third day. Sorry, I lost my place. Verse 22. "Moreover, some women of our company amazed us. They were at the tomb early in the morning, and when they did not find his body, they came back saying that he had even seen, they had even seen a vision of angels who said that he was alive. Some of those who were with us went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but him they did not see. And he said to them, 'O foolish ones and slow of heart, believe all that the prophets have spoken.'" So you can tell these two men are really struggling to understand. They hear what's going on, and probably part of them wants to believe, but there's another part of them that's fighting that, saying it can't be. What's Jesus' response? "Oh, foolish ones." Now, why are they foolish? He tells them, doesn't he? Why does he say they were foolish?
Slow of heart to believe.
To believe what? What does he mean by that? To believe all the prophets. What prophets is he talking about?
What they learned before, what was spoken of me.
Yeah, like you're talking about who? You're talking about Moses. You're talking about Isaiah, you're talking about Elijah, Jeremiah, all those who came before. You're talking about John the Baptist, John the Immerser. You're talking, you know, about all those who have spoken these truths. And he says, "Oh, foolish one, slow of heart, slow of mind," right? "To believe all that the prophets have spoken." Verse 26, "Was it not necessary that the Christ should suffer these things and enter into his glory?" That's what the prophet said was going to happen, right? You can't read Isaiah 52 and 53 without understanding what he was going to go through. That's just one of the prophecies of his suffering. And so he's saying, you should have known that. And enter into his glory, verse 27. And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he interpreted to them all in all the scriptures the things concerning himself. That must have been a long conversation.
Yeah.
I think about that a lot. We can't get through one passage in one class. Maybe he did a lot quicker than me. But he sits down with them. He helps them to understand the scriptures. You might think about Acts 8:35, when Philip joined the eunuch in the chariot. What does verse 35 say? And beginning at this scripture, he taught him Jesus. That's kind of what Jesus is doing himself here. It says, verse 28, so they drew near to the village to which they were going. He acted as if he was going further, but they urged him strongly, saying, stay with us, for it is toward evening, and the day is now far spent. So he went in to stay with them. When they had, when he was at the table with them, now notice this, underline this in my notes. He took the bread and blessed and broke it and gave it to them. There's something significant about that to me, and it comes up again and again after his resurrection. Sunday morning, we talked about the center of our worship, right? It hinges on what? What does it hinge on? Jesus' death, burial, and resurrection, right? Isn't that our hope? That's the gospel. That's the message of Christianity. That's the thing we put our faith in. What did he do in Matthew 26, verse 26? What the text tells us? When y'all gonna start talking? Matthew 26, 26. What did he say? I'm going to give a quiz about my sermons afterwards. How many of you were listening? While they were eating, he took bread, he broke it, he blessed it, and he said, and he gave to each of them. He said, take, eat, this is my body, which is given for you. In like manner, he also took the cup, and he gave it to all of them. And after blessing, he said, what? Drink of it, all of you, for this is my blood of the new covenant, which is given for the remission of sins. This is a significant moment. I know that just from simply the text. Look at it with me. He took bread and blessed it and broke it and gave it to them. And what does verse 31 say? And their eyes were opened and they recognized him. Notice the key moment. Echoes of the Lord's Supper, right? Of the Passover. This is the bread of my body. He breaks the bread. And something clicks into place for them. To me, that's just amazing. What a moment. Wouldn't you love to have been there? I'd love to have been walking with Cleopas and the other disciple. Wouldn't you? I mean, that would have been great. And the problem is what? As soon as they recognize him, what happens? He just goes. I'm like, now that's, I want to point something out, I think that's significant about that in just a minute. But we need to go a little bit further and come back. All right, so who's here? Okay, we know we have Jesus. We've got Cleopas, but who's the other guy? Text doesn't tell us. At least not yet, does it? Let's see if the text tells us who it was. I think this is important. All right, verse 32. They said to each other, did not our hearts burn within us while he talked to us on the road, while he opened the scriptures? That gives me chill bumps. That was impactful for these two. Verse 33, they arose at that same hour and returned to Jerusalem, and they found the 11 and those who were with them gathered together, saying, the Lord, now notice this, has risen indeed. You know, I think about them in John chapter 4. John chapter 4, Jesus meets with who? The Samaritan woman by the well. They have their conversation. What does she do after they have their conversation? Do you remember?
She goes into
Sychar. She says, come and see a man that's told me everything that I ever did. And she's so convincing, people start coming out of the town to meet him. Do you remember what the people said to her afterwards? You should go back and reread that, because I think it's pretty neat. I don't think they say this in a mean way, but they essentially say to her, you know, we came to him originally because you told us, but what happened after they met with him? We're not going because of what you said to us. We're going because of what we experienced. We kind of have a similar situation here. At first, they're reliant on those women who were telling them what happened to them. But now, they have seen. They have experienced. They realized. The Lord has risen indeed. Now notice how that ends. And has appeared to Simon. Simon. Who's Simon? Who's Simon?
Peter.
Simon Peter, right? The other names are completely left my head. What's his other name? It's three names we know of in the scripture. But one of them is just another translation of Peter. What?
Cephas.
Thank you. That's just a different form of Peter. But his actual name was what?
Simon.
Jesus gave him the name Peter. But his name he was known by was Simon. Simon. And this accounts really well with what Paul says. If you go over to 1 Corinthians chapter 15. 1 Corinthians 15, those first five verses first four verses deal with the gospel. And Paul is reminding them of what the gospel is. Verse 1 tells us he's reminding them of the gospel. If you go down to verse 3, he says, this is what the gospel is. What is it? That's right. That he was crucified for our sins, that he was buried, and that he rose on the third day. That's the gospel. That's the good news. Verse 5 then goes on to tell us about his resurrection and why we can trust it. Notice the list. He appeared to
Cephas,
then to the 12.
Then he was seen by 500 people.
So when did he appear to Cephas?
So Cephas is not quoted in that 12?
Huh? No, it's saying he appeared to Simon first and then to the whole group. That even gets a little more complicated when we go there. So hold on to the 12 for a second. We got to factor in Thomas and his appearance. But the first time was to Mary. The second time it was to the other women. Then the third time it was to Cleopas and Simon. And that accords exactly with what we see here in Luke 24. Now, I want to point out, I emphasize that for a reason. What did you notice about the conversation in Luke 24? Was there anything that stood out that was maybe uncommon for Peter? Did you notice anything that maybe went a little uncharacteristic of who Peter generally is?
Well, it doesn't say that he said anything at all.
Very quiet. Now, it does mention one time that both of them spoke up, but who did the majority of the talking?
Jesus.
Cleopas. Well, Jesus, of course, did a lot. But of the two men, Cleopas was the one who was doing the majority of the talking. Why would Peter do something so uncharacteristic? Wouldn't you assume Peter is very, normally he's very talkative? Isn't he normally the first one to speak?
Imagine he still feels guilty. He
does depressed.
Yeah, so why this change? I think that's right. Now, for a minute, just remember what he's been through. Right? The night before he's arrested, what did he say to Jesus? Very proudly, what did he say?
I'll never leave.
I don't care what these other guys do. I'll never leave you. When Jesus was arrested, what did he do?
He left.
Well, before that.
Before that.
When he's being arrested, he got the sword out. Hey, I'm going to war for you, Jesus. There's not a mention of another man in that group pulling his sword, but Peter did. And just a few hours later, he found himself denying Jesus three times. Now, Jesus told him, right, you're going to do this. No way. I'm not doing this. Three times. On that third time, Luke tells us what? When he denied him the third time, he met the eyes of Jesus. Their eyes met, and what did he hear? Sight, right, and ear and auditory all coming together there. He sees, he hears, he cries. The text tells us he went out and wept bitterly. So here is one of his closest followers, the man that has went everywhere with Jesus. Even when many of the other disciples didn't go. Remember, there are times when it was just Peter, James, and John, and that was it. And remember, they went to, they went into the home where he raised the daughter up. Peter along with James and John, who on the night he was going out there to pray, it was Peter and James and John that went up further with him than the others did. And it is that same man who, despite being told you're going to do this, that I'm sure in his mind and his heart absolutely failed utterly. When Jesus died, did Peter have any expectation of seeing Jesus again?
No.
I don't think there was any expectation. We've all, at times in our life, bore the brunt hardship of guilt, of something we've said, something we've done, something we've not done that we should have done. Is it fun bearing guilt? What's that relief like when you're able to unburden your guilt? Maybe you're able to make resolution with somebody that you've harmed. That's a good feeling, isn't it? Just imagine for a minute that you're in a relationship. Maybe you have something similar to this, that you bear some guilt. And the person dies before you're able to make amends. That's a hard thing to deal with. That's hard. Because you know what? What do you know? I can't do it. I cannot change it. At least between me and that person. I can try to change my life. I can try to be a better person. But I know that there's this thing, this monster on me that I can't get rid of. This is why you should deal with that now and not put it off. And I'm sure in Peter's mind and in his heart, man, I have failed utterly. I failed my Lord, and I can't ever change it. And yet, Sunday morning, first thing he hears is what? The body's gone. Where did the body go? Now, I'm sure he's like not thinking it resurrected, but now here's this other injustice done to my Lord, and now his body's been taken, and so he runs to the tomb. Remember, he runs right into the tomb, and the body's not there. And then somewhere along the way, the women come back, and they say, "He's risen. I've seen the Lord." And then Mary comes back, and she says, "I've seen the Lord. He talked to me." What does Peter do? How many times does Peter go to the tomb? If you read the gospel, sometimes it may, if you don't really lay it out and study it, it may seem as though there's a contradiction, like there's two different recordings of the same event. But when you look at it, what the gospels actually teach us is that Peter went to the tomb twice. The first time he went was when Mary Magdalene came back and said, "His body's gone." Remember, Mary doesn't know at that time he's risen. It's not until she goes back with Peter and John, after Peter and John have left, that Jesus appears to her. And then she comes back and she says, "I've seen him. He's risen." What does Peter do? He runs back to the tomb. But you notice the second time he goes back to the tomb, he doesn't go inside. What's he looking for? He's looking for Jesus. He's looking, I believe, to unburden his heart. But Jesus doesn't appear to him. And now you have later on, I don't know how long, but a little while later, you've now got Cleopas and Peter walking to Emmaus. And here Jesus appears, but at first they don't know it's Jesus. It's not until he breaks that bread that their eyes are opened. And then what happens? He vanishes. Now, if you're Peter, what's the one thing you've been wanting to do? Let's have a talk. I need to have a conversation with you. I need to tell you how guilty I feel and how bad I feel about it. He didn't get that, does he? And so I just say all that to kind of get into his mindset going forward. If you go back to Luke 24, verse 36, and as they were talking about these things, notice what happens. So they've come back, Peter and Cleopas, Simon and Cleopas, they've come back and they've said, "Wow." And here, as they were talking about these things, Jesus stood among them and said, "Peace to you." But they were startled, frightened, that they thought they saw a spirit. And he said to them, "Why are you troubled? Why do doubts arise in your hearts? See my hands and my feet, that it is me. Touch me and see. For a spirit does not have flesh and bones, as you see that I have." And when they had said this, he showed them his hands and his feet. You know, we give Thomas a hard time. We'll come back to Thomas. Thomas wasn't the only one who needed to see some stuff. Just keep that in mind.
I'm a little confused because it says that he appeared to the 11. Judas wasn't there, and Peter wasn't there, and Thomas wasn't there. So
okay, so good question. That's a great question. Have you ever heard of something called a synecdoche?
Call what?
A synecdoche.
No.
All right, a synecdoche is a literary term where you talk about a part for the whole. All right, so let's say we're going to war and the newspaper comes out and says the U.S. has put boots on the ground. Have we literally took a plane over and dumped a bunch of boots out? What does that mean? Y'all looking at me real puzzled, but Huh?
There's soldiers on the
ground. There's soldiers on the ground. There's artillery probably there. There are other things. But what are we doing? We're taking something small to refer to the larger portion, right? And so that term, the 12, became a significant to refer to the apostles. Actually, how many apostles do we have?
13
apostles, ultimately.
Well,
and it's still referred to as the 12, even after that.
Actually, 14, if you count Judas and then Matthias and then Paul.
What name? Say it again, I'm sorry.
Well, I mean,
roughly
there's 14.
Yeah, I guess you could count Judas.
Yeah.
So, but this still goes to my point. I mean, sometimes we do those kind of little tricks, those figures of speech, when we know we're not actually talking about 12 individuals. The Old Testament does it all the time. The Old Testament, like in Isaiah's prophecy, how does he refers to the Israelite people? Well, sometimes he refers to them as Judah. Sometimes he refers to them as Israel. Sometimes he refers to them as Jerusalem. Sometimes, you know, and so sometimes he refers to the people of Edom as Edom, right? Edom is not alive, but yet they're still called Edom, right, referred to that way. The people of the southern kingdom referred to as Jerusalem. Does he just mean Jerusalem? No, he's talking about the whole area. All right, so it's just a figure of speech. That makes sense? I'm not a linguistic expert, but that's my understanding. Man, we got away. There's so much more here. I love this study. It's so important. So we'll go into that next week. We'll finish this out. He appears to, it's actually 10 of the 11. and we'll talk about why that is. We'll start playing around with numbers. But we'll talk about his other interactions along the way. Any other questions or comments? Keep that Simon Peter thing going, because we're going to come back to that. That's really significant to me as we study this. Thank you all. We'll dismiss now from class and be rejoined for our devotional in just a minute.